Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and by CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Barry.
Always excited to be with you, and what a pleasure to speak to you today. I'm coming to you from Washington, where it feels like we're about to hit springtime for real, which makes me very, very happy because we get out of the cool weather. And I hope wherever you are that you're enjoying the season's change and that you're noticing that. At the same time, I'm also happy about our guest today. We have our first guest is going to be a lady that's been with us several times before, Shannon Schuyler from PwC. You may remember that we've talked with her from time to time about what her company, PricewaterhouseCoopers, is doing. And they're still doing it, and it puts her in a special category. And we want to talk to her now about their continuing effort to make a positive difference in the lives of young people through the company. Shannon, welcome back to Home and Family Finance. Nice to have you on the show.
Oh, it's always nice to be here. Thanks, Paul.
I noted when I received some information here, this week from Dahlia Hill, your PR person, that you are still doing what you have been doing for some time, and that is to put dollars where your heart is in terms of making a difference with young people. Give us an idea of what's happening now. What's continuing here?
Oh, absolutely. And as you know, in 2012, we made a commitment called Earn Your Future, and it was a 5-year commitment. $160 million that turned into $190 million because there was so much we had to do to really reach over 2.5 million students and educators around financial literacy and to really help them to understand that it's a life skill, to really understand how to manage your money, how to manage your future through really understanding your finances. And we've finished that 5-year commitment. We actually got there a little bit earlier than we thought we would, and we wanted to keep the momentum going. And so we're very excited to announce our next commitment, which will be another 5-year commitment called Access Your Potential. And it's now a $320 million 5-year commitment
will
take in many of the things around Earn Your Future, around financial literacy, but then also add access to tech skills, knowing that that's really critical for students to know, especially in underserved communities, as they look at what their careers will be.
This is amazing. So not only did you finish that first effort, but you said, okay, obviously it's making a positive difference, and let's continue. So let's talk a little bit about PwC. Tell me a little bit about the company and how you got to this point.
Sure. Well, PwC is a very large professional services firm. We have about 50,000 people in the U.S. and about 225,000 people globally. And we're good at a lot of things. We have exceptional quality in our assurance and our tax and our advisory work. We are really on the cutting edge of some fascinating things in technology around robots and artificial intelligence. And we hire a lot of people. And one of the things that we've learned is both our people have a really strong knowledge of finance. And we wanted to be able to take that and look back to our communities and where we live and work and say, how can we really support students? How can we support teachers to making better decisions that really will impact their entire lives? And that's both from a financial decisions as well as where they're going to go to college and what careers ultimately they're going to have.
Well, let me tell you a little bit more about Shannon's, what she won't tell you, but I will. She's Chief Purpose Officer and Corporate Responsibility Leader at PwC. She has led this effort to say to this big corporation, look, we're doing great things and we can do even more things by making a difference, a positive difference in the lives of young people. So kids coming out of college, and by the way, it obviously it's because they care, but it's also because they recruit from these young people that they find and help. And so you've made a big effort in the last 5 years by doing this this program, and now the $320 million commitment will go specifically to what, Shannon? How will this be used?
Well, we're actually looking to dramatically scale what we did the first time. And so our first goal was to reach 2.5 million students, and we ended up reaching over 3.5 million. But now we want to reach 10 million. We believe we have to continue to scale our efforts through technology, through increasing the reach of communities that we go into, and also now being able to reach them not only with financial skills, but also with tech skills and getting them interested in things around data analytics and cybersecurity and coding and things that will help them to get to the careers that are going to be there when they're ready to graduate from whatever school they end up going to.
And where is the line, if there is such a thing, between the financial literacy part of this and the tech part of this? Is there a line there or not?
We really feel that it goes together incredibly well. We've been teaching students to really understand a life skill of how to understand their money and how to realize how far that money can go. One of the things that we know, considering where we are in the society, is that having tech skills is the key to a long-term career going forward. And it's the way in which they're going to be able to leverage their dollars to be able to go further.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're hoping that these things come together. And so we can have people understand how to spend their money, and even more so, understand where they should be going to school, what kind of credentials they will get, and to think about, then, what am I going to do after college? And to be able to budget that time and that money to make them successful. So we really think these things come together in not just a financial understanding way, but now to careers. And how are you going to really take that financial understanding and leverage it going forward?
And let me talk a little bit about how we can remedy what is missing when young people get to this level. Who's not getting it done? Are our schools not teaching what they should be teaching in terms of these skills, or is it the home, the family? Have you decided where what's causing the gap?
Well, I think there's a lot of different things that are causing a gap that's there. And we recently did a study with the Business for Higher Education Forum, which is a coalition of CEOs and college and university presidents and other leaders really dedicated to seeing what skills our future workforce needs. And tech skills is one of those key areas that people are going to need, and we have a shortage. And so I think it's a combination of the economy has turned so fast that what we need to teach hasn't made its way into the schools and hasn't made its way into colleges and universities, and maybe even more importantly, hasn't made its way especially into communities where these things around tech were never talked about, which is why you have the tech industry having issues around diversity. And so I think it was everyone didn't realize how fast technology was going to move to get where it is and really be the predominant way in which people are going to have successful careers. So now I think people are trying to very quickly catch up. And this is one of the ways that we hope to get people caught up, is giving them access.
Well, I love your access. Your access comes with not only the will, but the way. And the way is a lot of money, which makes a difference. And PricewaterhouseCoopers is willing to put its money where its mouth is about what they're going to do. When we come back, we're going to talk more about how this works and how people can be involved if they should be out there that want to head in your direction. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, and we'll be right back.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
My guest is Shannon Schuyler with PricewaterhouseCoopers, someone who's been with us many times before because of the good work of their company. PricewaterhouseCoopers has decided that, look, if we're going to have good leaders and if we're going to have good candidates, we're going to have to do our part in making sure that they get the education that they need and they get the understanding, both financial literacy and in tech skills, to come into our company or wherever they go and be successful. So, Shannon, I think part of that then means that you have a responsibility to make sure that the education opportunity out there or the educational opportunities are in place to the degree that you can. I know you guys have looked in that direction, haven't you?
Absolutely. I mean, we really feel that given our role in society and given our size and our scale, that we have this dramatic responsibility to give back and to be able to help those who don't have a voice and to be able to make sure that they have hope and they have success and they have access. And we're really looking to do that not only by reaching students now in such a high volume to have them better understand financial capability, as well as to get a grasp around the tech skills that they're going to need in order to get the jobs of the future, but then also specifically looking at over 100,000 teachers and guidance counselors, because we want to make sure that they have the knowledge. The teachers out there, especially now millennial teachers, want to teach financial literacy, but they don't have the right curriculum or they themselves aren't comfortable. So we want to make sure that they are are comfortable, that they have the skills, they have the tools. They have us to reach out to both help them in class as well as individually. And then also the guidance counselors who are giving students information on what schools to go to. One of the things that sometimes gets left out is where to go based upon what you can afford and what kind of loans you can take out. So wanting to make sure that they can also have more financial understanding and then also look for opportunities within schools that will help students get more access to tech skills that will then look down the road, not just at school, but what kind of job they can actually get. And then we're also looking to see if you could mentor students and if you could coach individual students and you could take them through this entire process. So looking at them through high school, looking at them through getting them to decide to go into a tech-related field, helping them get into the right college, helping them then get a job. Is that something that's scalable? And so we're going to look specifically at 10,000 students to say, can we do that? Because if we can build a model that can actually get a student from that place to a successful career where they're proud of the things that they do and it lives their purpose, then we can have other companies join in and really do it to the masses.
And I wanted to ask you, we've talked about other companies. I think you guys said a great, and what I was saying before, folks, she won't talk about the fact because she's not going to criticize any other company. They're doing what they do. But I hope that more companies are looking at what you have done and what you're doing and decide that this is the model that we want to follow. Do you get the sense that other companies are jumping on board saying, hey, this is a great idea, we ought to be following this example or setting it one like this ourselves?
There's a lot of companies that now are looking at this. And so there's two things. Some are actually looking at financial literacy and they're reaching out to schools and they're also trying to help teachers understand more. And again, the more players that are in the space, the better. And you also have more and more companies that are looking at how to educate their own employees, which certainly is another great way to make sure that financial capability rings through not just with students, but with adults.
You know, Shannon, obviously, as you know, the program is about financial literacy. That's why we're on the air every week to help folks with this. And when we come back, I want you to let's talk a little bit more about what other people can be doing and should be doing and understanding what, for instance, data science is really all about. I mean, that's so important. I don't think that's not a term that young people and old folks like me, we don't know data science, but this is very important. So when we come back, let's take some time and just kind of explain that from your point of view. And thanks for being with us. Shannon Scatter, we'll be right back with more. Stay with us. You're listening to Home and Family Finance on the Radio America Network. I'm your host, Paul Berry. We're talking about, as always, being financially fit. Are you financially fit? If you're not, you need to get yourself in place. We're also talking about a corporation. There are others that are doing what PricewaterhouseCoopers is doing, but I don't think to the same degree, or at least I haven't found the companies that are making these kinds of commitments. The first commitment was for millions of dollars. There's a new commitment that they've now, a $320 million five-year investment focused on closing opportunity, education, and skill gaps. You can't ask for more than that from a company. Here's what, and Shannon, you're in perfect position to understand this because you've analyzed and studied these kids that have come into your program. You know what you've learned from them, and now you're ready to move to the next step with us. Is that a fair assessment?
It is. I'm incredibly proud that the organization has not just tried to put money there for the sake of it, but we analyze everything that we're doing. And so we are looking at each of the programs and monitoring what the success is. We're looking at how does this actually impact people's behaviors and how they treat dollars. We're looking at where are the best places that individuals could go to school, whether that's a two-year school, whether it's community college, whether it's a four-year. Mm-hmm. And really making sure that we know as much as we can so that we're passing that on to others who will be able to work directly with students to make an impact.
I think it's phenomenal. And if we've got people out there who are listening who are interested in learning more, please tell us how they can reach out to you and get more information.
Well, please, I would tell you to go to the pwc.com website, and there will be a lot that's out there specifically on Access Your Potential, as well as everything that we do within corporate responsibility and purpose. And so please come. There's ways that you can reach out, send emails. All of the information that we have, as you know, Paul, is open source. So any of the curriculum that we have, others can be able to take and to leverage. We want to make sure this isn't something that people have to pay for, but that people really have access to regardless of where they're looking from and what they want to utilize it for.
And if young people want to, or not even that, but teachers and others are involved, do they have to, are you, I guess what I'm trying to get to is there, are there particular training facilities or operations or efforts that if people want to learn more themselves, that they can get involved in here? Or do you have to be already within the confines of PwC?
No, this is something that anybody can do. We have folks who are even a part of this from different parts of the world and different countries. Our materials are translated into different languages to be able to help others, to be able to get access. Because, as you know, financial literacy is not just an issue within the U.S., but it's a global issue.
Yes.
So
yes.
People can get online. You can take an online course and understand things and look at videos and,
yeah.
and what's going on. Or you can get some paper courses, depending upon the technology within the classroom, and just be able to leverage it.
And if I use a term, and if you don't know what that means, and I'm learning, then this is where you can reach out and learn what you need to know. Data science. This is a field that incorporates skill sets from computer science, modeling, statistics, analytics, and mathematics using several scientific methods to draw insight from the data. Shannon, what did I just say?
Well, you're getting to the heart of what these tech skills are that people are going to need in the future. And I think people can get caught up thinking that the only thing that data science is related to STEM, and so everyone needs to go into 100% career that's technology focused. And what we're learning is data science really is the things, it's just the way you look at things. It's the way that you analyze different data sets. And that can come into play whether you're in human resources or in healthcare. It's the way in which we think, and it's making sure that you're exploring the way that different types of data can actually come together. And that's why it's been fascinating to have younger students look at things
yeah.
around coding and cybersecurity. It's not that that needs to be their career, but it gets them thinking in such a different way. And that's the thinking that we're going to need going forward as the world continues to rapidly change.
And I think the numbers are fascinating. Demand for analytical talent is growing. There were 2.3 million job postings in relevant fields in 2015. And this number is now projected, folks, listeners, to reach 2.72 million this year. So if you're sitting on the sofa deciding which what you should be doing, which way you should be going, that should be enough of an incentive. There are jobs out there, and they're going to need people like you folks out there to fill those jobs. Shannon, I can't thank you enough. I know you're out in Colorado heading back to the East Coast, and I thank you for taking time from your break to join us and to explain a new program. And congratulations on making this program continue to move. It takes dynamic people and a dynamic company, and you represent both.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. I just can't thank you enough for letting us get all of this out and for being such a great partner with us.
And I get it first. I love that. Folks, I got it first. So understand this and listen and see what you can find out that might have a direct impact on your life. Hope that happens. Thank you, Shannon. Safe journey home, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Paul.
You bet. Coming up next, Janet Bodner. On 70 years of doing financial literacy and the things that she's learned. Stay with us.
Helping you be safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Berry.
And yes, I know I didn't start the program out like I normally do every week with that information that I think is so important. It shows Home and Family Finance, but what it really amounts to is telling you or helping you, explaining to you about how to become financially fit. Because that's what we all need to be in terms of living a successful life, a successful financial life in this country. So let's go there. Let me get there. And because this works very well with the next segment coming up that I have, I held this because I think it's just a perfect fit. Are you financially fit is my question every week. Are you making more than you spend, or are you spending more than you make? And you know the answer to that based on whether or not you have money at the end of the week or the end of the month. End of the day, or are you borrowing, or are you asking for a small loan? I hope you're not. Don't spend more than you make. Do you have 6 months of what we call survival funds in your savings account? Now, add up all of your monthly expenses, mortgage, rent, utilities, food, drink, clothes, cleaning, everything, and then save whatever that total is, put that away in your savings account, not to be touched, okay? And do that at least for 6 months. I don't care how long it takes you to do it, but make sure you do it so you know that if something happens, you've got 6 months to live on those funds, and that should give you time to find a new job or to get well if you're sick. Whatever comes up, 6 months of what we call survival funds, and then 3 months of what I also call emergency funds. And the reason I do emergency funds, it keeps you from tapping into your survival funds. Now, it doesn't have to be the same total, but put aside enough money that when your neighbor, your friend, your family, your son, somebody calls and says, I need some money, and you don't want to stiff them, you can actually help them and do so. But do that out of what we call your emergency funds, okay? And finally, are you saving at least 5% of everything you make? 5% of your weekly or monthly income. I'd like you to save a lot more, but I'm doing a number that I think you can afford to do. 5% of every payday, pay yourself first, of everything you make, put it away, 5%. You're going to be surprised. You're going to thank me for saying that you should do it, and if you follow up, you're going to be very, very happy. Now, I've been doing this, as you know, for about 10 years here on Home and Family Finance, but there's a company, a very well-known company called Kiplinger, Kiplinger's Personal Finance, which has been doing this, and Kiplinger has been doing this for more than 70 years, 70 years. And with us today is a guest who's not been there for 70 years, but has been there long enough to really know what she's talking about. Janet Bodner is a nationally recognized expert in the field of children's and family finances and financial literacy. She is the author of two books, Money Smart Women and Raising Money Smart Kids. Her Money Smart Kids column appears regularly on Kiplinger.com. She's a regular contributor to WTOP Radio, the major all-news radio station here in D.C., and Fox Morning News. So she's wanted all over the place. And yet, despite that, she always finds a little time to give to us to come over and to join us. I asked her to come in and help us understand the 70 ways to build wealth, which is based, if you will, on the advice that's been given since 1947 when Kiplinger first launched the Personal Finance Magazine. Different headlines all over the place. But what are the 70 things, or at least a few of them? We won't get through all 70, but first of all, welcome to the program. Jen, nice to have you back.
Oh, thanks for inviting me, Paul. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Can you believe how quick time goes by? I mean, really, you know, you haven't been there 70 years, but
I
can't believe I've done this for 10 years. And I know you've done it for at least 10 years with a lot of great advice that you've shared with your background. By the way, folks, and I didn't tell you that, but she's a graduate of St. Bonaventure University, is a member of its board of trustees. She has her master's degree from Columbia University. And is just one of the most respected people in this business of financial consumerism. So, Janet, I'm pleased to have you here. And I know you've gone over some of the things that you often advise folks on. And I when I got the list of just a few, I was just so happy to see the very first one on your list is save early, save often. Isn't that that's so important, right?
Yeah, and it's a classic, and it just harkens back really to what you were just saying about the emergency fund, or mm-hmm. you know, saving 5% of your income. A lot of people think, you know, that either they have to make a lot of money to be able to save money, or they, you know, there's no way they can avoid living paycheck to paycheck. And really, the whole secret is to just start small and save.
That's
Start small, start young, put aside small amounts of money. You know, take advantage of the magic of compound interest, for heaven's sake, you know?
And discipline, Janet. Isn't it discipline? I mean, it's just, you've got to have the discipline. You can tell yourself, well, I'll do it next week, or no, I can't afford it. No, yes, you can. You got to have the discipline.
Sure. And the way to get the discipline, if you don't have it yourself, and frankly, how many of us really do, we all need some help, right? Have somebody else do it for you. If it's your pension or your retirement plan at work, your employer will do it for you. Or you can have your bank, your savings institution mm-hmm. will be happy to take a certain amount of money out of your paycheck, each paycheck, and put it aside for whatever it is you're saving for. It could be a vacation for next year. It could be something fun like that. It doesn't have to be for your retirement. It could be the college fund for your kids. But just having someone else do it for you, and then you know that's an, or your emergency fund. That's how you do the emergency fund, right?
Right.
And then you know that once that's taken care of, the amount of money that you get that you have in your pocket or in your regular checking account, that's the amount you can live on.
That's
and
right.
So then you make your decisions accordingly.
And folks, I got to tell you, there's nothing quite like the feeling, and you don't have to be wealthy to get this feeling, is that something happens and you've saved, Janet, you've put that money away, and
right.
you just you breathe a sigh of relief. Oh, God, I got, at least I can handle that. You know, I've got that.
Exactly.
God, that's a great feeling. But if you mm-hmm. don't save money, you won't have that feeling, that's for sure. The other point that you make, which is so, I think, is right on, is your credit. Polish
right.
your credit, you say.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Nowadays, now that's something that's changed in the last 70 years. One of the things that we did when we were preparing this story, which is a big story in the April issue of Kiplinger's, is we went back to the beginning, to our roots, and we looked through our dusty bound volumes to see what we were writing about then. Now, and that's one thing where, you know, credit or credit score, you
has
know,
changed.
Credit cards were just coming on the scene
yeah,
in those
yeah,
days.
Yeah.
Now, your credit score is people say it's like your GPA in college,
it
you
is.
Know, your SAT
that's
score.
Right.
But it really does make a difference as far as, you know, renting or an apartment, buying a home, getting a job, that sort of thing.
And everything so you do, Janet, and everything they do. Like, where'd you graduate from? Oh, good. What's your credit score? Do you know? I mean, it's just that way,
exactly.
folks. It's just that way.
Yeah.
We're gonna stop for just a minute here and take a break. My guest is the fabulous Janet Bodner from Kiplinger. We're talking about some of the many tips that she has shared with you over the years as Kiplinger looks at 70 years of publication. We'll be back with more and more good tips from Janet. Stay with us.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry.
My guest is Janet Bodner from Kiplinger Personal Finance. She is the editor. She is one of several over there, but probably the best known. And, Janet, I'm going to go off the reservation a little bit here. Where are you from? Are you from this area?
No. Originally, I'm from Pittsburgh.
Oh, okay. Okay. How'd you get to D.C.?
Well, I got a job with Kiplinger, actually.
Okay.
I had gone to Columbia, as you said, for my master's degree, and then I went back to Columbia on a special fellowship program in economics and business journalism.
Wow. Okay.
And after that, I got a job here at Kiplinger, and I started off writing our economic forecast each month. And I have done a lot of things at Kiplinger, including, you know, writing about women and money. I do a column
right.
on women and money for the magazine,
mm-hmm.
and here I am.
Two
and I'm
children,
now the editor.
Two books. One, Money Smart
money
Women.
Money Smart Kids. One
yeah.
is about children and money, and
yeah.
the other one, the most recent one, is Money Smart Women, and that's the name of the column that I now write for the magazine because we're focusing on women's issues
on women.
As well,
Wonderful.
Women's financial issues.
And when you came out of school, and of course the job was there, were you angling toward finances, or was this just what was available and which kind of led you? How'd you get there?
It was totally serendipitous. I was working my first job out of college. I was
yeah.
working on the copy desk of the Providence Journal in Rhode Island, and I wanted to move to the New York City area because that's where my then fiance, now husband, was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so one of the jobs that was available was as a business writer, and I had no experience as a business writer about what the heck, you know.
It's
I
there.
I did some on-the-job training, and
right.
that's when I applied for the Columbia Fellowship Program. In business and economics, so that I could actually learn a little bit about
right,
what I was
right.
writing about.
Well, you know what you were writing about. And life certainly provides us with opportunity and training,
that's
for sure. Did you have,
yep.
how many children do you have?
Well, I have three children. They're now grown, and I actually now have three grandchildren.
Oh, okay.
So my kids are married, and one of them has two children,
yeah.
Almost a newborn, and then my daughter had her first child, also almost a newborn. So I have these two little grandsons who are
good for you.
Within 6 weeks of each other.
Good for you, Janet. They're wonderful. Janet is a person, just like us folks. It's just that's the beauty
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, that's for sure. I actually do some of these 70 tips.
I bet you do. All right, here's a question. Did you do the one I'm going to talk about now? Did you save for college as soon as your children were born?
I say for my grandchildren as soon as they were born.
Wait a minute, Janet. Not your grandchildren.
Shut up, Paul.
Not your grandchildren.
Well, you know, back in the day, here's a good point. Back in the day when my kids were born, there were not specific college savings accounts.
Yeah,
now we have the 529 college savings plans,
right?
We did not have that in those days. So, yeah. I will say we did. My husband and I did have a general savings account, and we used that general savings account to pay for our kids' college. But when my youngest child was 13, he was in about eighth grade, that's when 529 accounts came on the scene, and we did open one for
him.
Good
for you. Good for you.
And we did use it to pay for his college. We had 5 years. Yeah, about 5 years to save before he started school, and we did take advantage of it.
Folks, the 529 program is available in every state. You can do that, and anybody can contribute to it. So look into it. It's a wonderful way to save for your children's education. I did not, Janet. And let me just say, and folks, all three of my children are in debt. All three, all are college graduates. All three are in debt. We're doing everything we can. And I'm not talking about just pity debt. I'm talking about serious debt, because that's what it took to put them in school. They all graduated from college. But, yeah, I am so sorry, Janet, that, I didn't take advantage. So your point is well taken. It is so important that the moment that you have these kids, even before, if you're planning on it, start saving money. You can't overemphasize that, can you?
No, you can't. And, you don't. If you don't want to have enough, again, you don't need a lot of money to start a 529 plan. You really don't. The minimum investments, if there is one, is very low, $25 maybe.
Right.
But it's very low. So it's not like, oh, my gosh, I need to put $10,000. No, you don't need to do that. But also, you have grandparents. I'm a witness.
You're doing it now. Yeah.
I'm doing it. Plus, you have other, relatives who want to do something for the kids. And instead of just buying toys that they're going to, get tired of, they can contribute. They can open their own account and potentially get a tax break, depending on whether they're about two-thirds of the states do give tax breaks.
That's right.
For state taxes if you open a 529 account. And, so you might get the tax break, or if it's a small amount of money and you don't really care about getting the tax break, they can give the money to you, and you can put the money into your 529 account for the kids. So, there are ways that you can get other people to help out.
That's right. But however you decide to do it, the tip from Janet is very simple. Don't wait. You don't have plenty of time. You just don't, especially at the cost of education today. Start saving and save as much as you can. The other thing that you dare touch base with is life insurance and home insurance. Mm-hmm. I don't want to even talk about insurance. I hate insurance. And yet... And yet it is so very important, in terms of something going wrong. Let me take a break and come back, and let's talk a little bit about the importance of that and whatever else is on your mind, okay? My guest is Janet Bodner. You're listening to Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. Listening to Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, and my guest is Janet Bodner, author, columnist, advice giver, and someone who's been around for a while and is worth paying attention to. One of the things that I just hated to get involved in was life insurance. Because you know why, Janet? Because like most folks, I don't understand it. I don't understand life. I don't understand term. I don't understand. I get home insurance. I get car insurance. But you know what I mean. But you've got to take time to figure that out, right?
Right, exactly. Well, the simplest thing, and this is really what most people need anyway, the simplest type of insurance is, as you just mentioned before, term insurance. And all that means is you are insured Your life is insured for a certain term, a certain period of time. You know, it could be 20 years, 30 years, depending on how old you are, how young your children are, how long you need the insurance. It's pure insurance coverage. If something happens to you, then your beneficiaries collect. If nothing ever happens to you, then the term just expires, you know, and you've paid for the insurance during the time that you felt that you need it. It's the simplest form of life insurance. It's also the least expensive type of life insurance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Most people, you know, you can get a fairly fairly hefty policy for a few hundred dollars a year. It's not all that expensive. So not everyone needs insurance. If you don't have any dependents, if you don't have anyone who's depending on you for, you know, their financial well-being, you don't need it. But, you know, so maybe if you're just a couple just, you know, starting off, you're each still independent, you're each still working, you may not need insurance. But once you have a child, then, you know, life changes. You do have someone who's depending on you, both of you, actually. And so, you know, I think that it is time, you know, that's the time to start, that most people start looking into it. And again, term insurance is the simplest, least expensive way to get the coverage you need. And we do have a little rule of thumb in here. You can use calculators online to figure out how much insurance you need, but a little rule of thumb that I think is still good even after 70 years, we say at least 8 to 10 times your gross income. So, you know, depending on what your income is, you know, multiply it out, and that's about how much you need. And again, you can probably get several hundred thousand dollars worth of term insurance for only a couple of hundred dollars a year in premiums.
And because there's no pot of gold at the end there, folks, it's not terribly expensive. So, you know, but you're covered while you're alive. And if something happens to you, then your loved ones will reap the benefit of it. So that makes perfect sense. The other one, I know we're running out of time, but you say, I love this, never pay retail when you buy a car.
Right, exactly. Everybody always asks about that one. But it's so true. And again, 70 years make a big difference. When you know, when you bought a car in the old days, you know, you either had to haggle and you weren't really quite sure, you know, if you were getting the right price. Certainly if you were buying a used car, you didn't quite know what you were getting.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, I mean, you have the internet, you can actually, you know, plug in, you can go to a site and plug in exactly the type of model of car you want, what features do you want, and, you know, you can get four or five price points from various dealers in your area, and you can select the one that you like the best. If you don't like to haggle, there's a service called Car Bargains that will haggle for you, that will, you know, do the bargaining for you. And if you want to buy a used car, you can get the certified pre-owned vehicles, meaning, you know, they have been inspected by the factory. They come with a warranty. So there's some transparency in what you're purchasing, both, you know, when you're shopping for a new car and when you're shopping for a used car.
Okay. And stocks. I don't know a thing about stocks. You know, should I jump in or should I stay out?
Well, I think most people, if you are planning for retirement in particular, so if you've got 20, 30, or 40 years to retirement, and you have a retirement plan through your employer, you know, I think you should be in the stock market. Mm-hmm. You know, the stock market does over time yield the highest return of anything that you can invest in. Now, that doesn't mean it's not going to go down. It's going to go down. But over time, and if you've got time, if you've got 10 years or more, you can usually ride out those ups and downs. And now you have the option of, you know, you can invest in a mutual fund that invests in the entire market. So, you know, you're still at market risk because, as you know, the market can go up and down. But you don't have to select your own stocks if you don't want to do that. And, frankly, a lot of people don't have the time or the expertise to do that or the inclination to do that. But there are ways that you can spread your risk, if you will, and, you know, invest in the stock market without, you know, without having to worry every night when you hear what happens.
Exactly.
Just don't listen to the news.
There are so many other points here. Where do I find this? Is it? It's in April magazine?
Right. It is the April issue of Kiplinger's Personal Finance. It's on newsstands right now, or you can see it on our website. You can actually order it. We've had such a great demand for the 70 Ways that we have it on our website, kiplinger.com, and you can buy it as a special report.
Janet Bodner, thank you for taking time. I know you're a busy lady. I appreciate you coming over and joining us here to talk about these things. Please come back soon, would you?
Yes, I'd be happy to.
Okay. Janet Bodner with us, folks. I hope you've learned a thing or two, and if you're not so sure, check out the magazine. Lots of great points, lots of great tips. Financially fit, it's so important. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. I'll be looking for you. Hope you'll join us then. Until then, have a great week.